Packing order theory is another theory. Packing order theory, it tries to capture the cost of the asymmetric information. And it states that the company's priorities, their sources of the finance, from internal financing to the equity, and according to the law of least efforts or the least resistance, the preferring the raise the equity as a financing mean of the last resort. Okay. Hence, the internal financing is used first. When that is depleted, then the debt is issued, and when there is no longer sensible to issue the more debt, equity is always issued. Packing order theory also states that it maintains the business adherence to the hierarchy of the financing sources and prefer to internal financing when available, and the debt is preferred over the quality, over the equity, if the external financing is required. Thus, the form of the debt in a company which chooses, it can act as a signal for need in the external finance. Agency cost. This agency cost is very important, as there are three types of cost involved in this agency cost, which can help to explain the relevance of the capital structure. Agency cost also influences the capital structure. First one, three assumptions. One, asset substitution effect. As the debt equity increases, the management has to increase the incentive to undertake the risk or the risky, even negative NPV also, net present value. Okay? This is because if the proper and the successful shareholders get, when the shareholders get its all the upside, where if it is unsuccessful, debt holders get all the downside. If the project is undertaken, there is a chance of the company's value to decrease and wealth transfer from the debt holders to shareholders. Second assumption is the underinvestment problem. Underinvestment for debt or equity, okay, or debt overhang problem. It is also called as debt overhang problem, or maybe underinvestment problem. If the debt is risky, for example, in a growth company, the gain from the project will accrue to the debt holders rather than the shareholders. Thus, the management has an incentive to reject the positive NPV, net present value projects, even though they have the potential to increase the company's value. Third one is free cash flow. Unless the free cash flow is given back to the investor, the management has to incentive to destroy the company's value through the empire building and the perks, etc. Increasing the leverage imposes the financial discipline on the management. Let us understand now the structured corporate finance. The structured corporate finance is important in the project finance because the manner in which the management thinks the finances to be raised, it has to be structured in a perfect manner what the company is doing its business. An active area of the research in the finance is that which tries to translate the model above as well as the others into the structured theoretical setup, that it times consistent, that it has a dynamic setup of the similar in that one that can be observed in the real world. Managerial contract, debt contract, equity contract, investment return, and all have the long-lived multi-period implications. Therefore, it is hard to think, very difficult to think, that though what the implication of the basic model above are for the well or real world, if they are not embedded in the dynamic structure that approximates the reality. The neutral mutation hypothesis. What is this neutral mutation hypothesis? If the companies fall into the various habits of financing which do not impact on the value, then market timing hypothesis come into existence. The capital structure is an outcome of the historical cumulative timings of the market managers. Another aspect is the accelerated investment effect. Even in the absence of the agency cost, the levered companies invest faster because of the existence of the deferral task. Therefore, the capital substitution theory and its management of the companies manipulate the capital structure such that the earning per share are maximized. So capital gearing ratio, now we will understand. Capital gearing ratio is nothing but capital bearing ratio divided by capital not bearing risk. So capital bearing risk includes the debentures, risk is to pay interest, and the preferred capital, where risk is to pay the dividend at the fixed rate. So the capital not bearing the risk includes the equity share capital. Therefore, we can say that capital gearing ratio is nothing but it is a debentures, but debentures plus preference share capital divided by the shareholders' fund. It's very simple to understand this capital gearing ratio. Arbitrage. Similar questions are also concerned about the varieties of the speculators known as the capital structure arbitrager, and see the arbitrage, and the capital structure arbitrager seeks the opportunities created by the differential pricing of the various instruments issued by the companies. The tax debt shield. Tax is also considered as one of the shield. So one of the key assumptions made in the analysis above is that there is no tax. In fact, government claims some amount of cash flow in the form of taxes, and the equity holders and the debt holders are not the only claimants to the cash flow of the company or the government. It is in addition to the claimant, the government exercises its claim on the taxing the company earning. Payment to the debt holders and the equity holders are taxed differently. Interest payments to debit holders are the tax deductible, reducing a company's taxable income by amount of the interest expenses. Therefore, the amount of the debt in the company's capital structure reduces the government share of the company's cash flow, and increases what is left to the equity and the debt holders. Debt capacity. In the market that is perfect, except for the existence of the corporate taxes, the greatest value of the company would result from the capital structure with 100% debt. In practice, however, the companies do not hold 100% debt or anywhere near in the percentage. Then why companies do not hold 100% debt? There are reasons. One, possible bankruptcy. Possible bankruptcy, what happens in that? First, if the company goes bankrupt, it will no longer be able to utilize its tax shield from the debt. That is one. Second, as leverage increases, the probability of the financial distress increases, and moderating the company's incentives to more debts. Additional cost. There is additional cost in the financial distress that also reduces the company's incentive to the increase the leverage. And for example, when the company is in financial distress, it will be incurring the various legal, accounting, and administrative expenses also. Negative action includes various other concerns and concerned parties that will also react negatively. Creditors and stakeholders are getting impacted by the negative action. So creditors, more importantly, creditors will raise their required interest rate to the to compensate for their higher risk bankruptcy, and the other stakeholders in the company will also become increasingly worried as the leverage increases and to take actions that are likely to worsen in the company's situation. For example, employee might start looking for another job, okay, because they don't want to continue with the company which might be a bankrupt in the near future. So note that it is likely that the best employees are ones who find the new job immediately. Customers also might also be worried about the survivor of the company and the commitment to the company's supply, spares, parts, etc. in the future is again question mark. Suppliers also acting the similar behavior, that suppliers will also increasingly reluctance to trade on the favorable credit terms as the probability of the financial distress increases for the company. Impact of the cash flow is definitely there because of these reasons, foreseeing the company is going to be bankrupt. Okay, this discussion reflects another departure from the perfect market assumptions to assumptions of Modigliani and Miller. Here, we see that reality adding more debt to the capital structure of the companies that is close to the financial distress will negatively impact that company's future cash flow. Thus, in reality, the capital structure and the future cash flow are not the independent, in contrast to whatever the assumptions made in MM theory. Flexibility is also another aspect under the distressed or bankruptcy company which is heading toward the bankruptcy. The reason is not to have the capital structure with 100% debt is the desire for the flexibility that comes from the having the cash on the hand. Issuing new bonds or new shares is very expensive for those companies. If a company is financially constrained, it might have heard about the additional financing where the good investment opportunities arises, thereby limiting its growth potential. This opportunity cost must be considered as the company is taken as an additional amount for the debt. Covenants. Finally, the company might be limited in the amount of the debt it can take based on the covenants. Covenants is nothing but these are the promises in existing debt contract that prohibits the companies from issuing the debt beyond certain level. Therefore, the trade-off between the tax advantage of the debt financing and the disadvantage of the financial distress cost results into different optimal debt level for each company. This optimal debt level is often referred as to the company's debt capacity. Company's debt capacity may reflect the owner's subjective willingness of the bearing the risk. Owner may bear the risk, or promoters may bear the risk. The other owners may have a desire or ability to take more debt. But in fact, according to some, this issue is the motivational behind some mergers and acquisitions. If the company's owners choose not to take any debt because of that, do not want to bear any default risk, the other potential owners of the investors may see an arbitrage opportunity to buy the company and increase its debt capacity. Weighted average assets also need to be calculated. Weighted average cost of the capital is also playing very important role in project finance. WACC means weighted average cost of the capital. This is the method which allows the analysis of the value of the company at any capital structure, that is at any amount of the debt and equity, to determine a blended discount rate that reflects the relative shares of the debt and equity in the company. This blended discount rate is WACC, that is weighted average cost of the capital, and it is used to value the company's expected future cash flows. The WACC method can be used to value a company's under either its current capital structure or under proposed different structure. WACC declines as the percentage of the debt in a capital structure increases because of the debt tax shield, and also note that the return on assets is defined as required rate of return on the company's assets if the company is 100% equity financed. Focus on WACC states that let us consider that the component of the equation is a greater detail in section below, and the component of the WACC formula, the return on the debt, that is RD, return on the debt RD is the expected return required by the debt holder as compensation for the risk associated with their debt claim. If you are evaluating a new investment project and the return on the debt uses in the weighted average cost of the capital, that is WACC calculation, is the cost of the debt to the company if the company was to raise a capital in the debt market today. You should not use the interest rate for the debt that it is already on the balance sheet. All other things are equal. The higher the percentage of the debt on the company's balance sheet, the greater the interest rate the company will have to pay to the debt holders. This is because the greater amount of the debt increases the default risk of the company. In the figure, this is illustrated by flat RD line for low and the medium level of the debt and an upward sloping line for the higher level of the debt. Return on equity. Return on debt we have seen. Now return on equity. Return on equity is nothing but it is expected return which is required by the equity holders as a compensation for them for their investment and the risk associated with their equity claim. The expected return on the equity that can be determined by using the capital asset pricing model, that is CAPM formula, or any other assets pricing relationship such as the arbitrage pricing theory. Especially, the CAPM measures that risk of the equity through the equity beta, and the covenant, that is positivity, is the risk measures that into expected return on the equity. It shows in the formula which is mentioned here, RE equal to RR plus beta E into bracket RM minus RF and RF. Okay. Note that the equity beta, with other things held constant, be higher as the debt ratio increases because of the increased risk of the holding equity. This higher equity beta will yield and increase the return on the equity because of the increased proportion of the debt, and a concept is illustrated in the graph that is shown. Okay. Also note that the high debt level, the slope at RE as the function of the debt level is decreasing, and the reason for this is that the part of the increased risk resulting from the increased debt level is borne by the debt holders. Equity. Equity is the market value of the equity. This amount can be easily be determined by multiplying the number of shares issued and outstanding by current stock prices. And debt is a market value of the debt. Okay. In practice, we often assume that the market value of the debt is the same as the book value. Sometimes we can calculate the value of the long-term debt by multiplying the number of bond outstanding by the market price. Short-term debt is determined by using the amount which is shown in the balance sheet because it is due within 1 year. Companies often list the value of the debt in the notes to their financial statements. Remember, a company will generally issue a debt up to its perceived debt capacity. Therefore, it is assumed in this course that the company is always operating at the current debt capacity. Debt plus equity, that is D plus E, is equal to the market value of the company. Recall that D and E are the maker values of the debt and equity respectively. E is also referred as the equity value of the company. Marginal corporate tax rate is nothing but that is TC, is used in determining the weighted average cost of the capital, and in doing this, make sure that you count the taxes that the company bears. For example, if in the US, the companies have the marginal federal tax rate is 35%, and they do have the bear the state taxes also. When you're considering the state taxes, the analysts often use the total marginal tax rate is 40%. And this marginal tax rate should be used instead of the average tax rate, because the tax deduction of the interest payment will take an effect at the marginal rate, that is the rate at which the last dollar is taxed. Weighted average cost of the capital under changing the debt conditions. As you have learned, the WACC method can be used to value the company at the debt capacity. WACC is a dynamic tool, however, and it can be used to value a company at the capital structure different from the current rate or current one. Use WACC under the changing debt conditions, which differs from the basic WACC in that it requires you to estimate the cost of the capital and the company's to assets at all equity capital structure, and then re-estimate your calculation assuming a revised capital structure. In practice, using the WACC, that is weighted average capital cost, under the changing debt conditions, which involves the recalculating the company's beta in two steps. First, you must recalculate the beta so that it reflects an all equity capital structure. This is known as unlevering beta. And the second one is you must recalculate the beta at the new capital structure, which is known as relevering beta. Financial closure. This financial closure means that all the sources of the funds which are required for the project have been up, and a key milestone in the project implementation in the financial closure that may take a long time, particularly for infrastructure projects, because several things have to be sorted out to the project structure fundable. For example, it took about 3 years to hammer out a power purchase agreement to be signed by the independent power producers with respective state electricity board. In general, the financial closure is achieved as soon as when a suitable credit enhancement is done to the satisfaction of the lender, when adequate underwriting arrangements are made for market-related offering, and the resourcefulness of the promoters is well established, and the process is started early, and the concurrent appraisal is as initiated if the several lenders get the agencies involved. Thank you.